Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Wellbeing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge. Good day. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome a visionary who is focused on supporting leaders to understand the connection between social health and engagement in the workplace. Tiagi Dallanoro serves as the executive director of the Employee Wellbeing Council, which is powered by OOT Social Health. The council champions a human-centric approach to workplace wellbeing by anticipating how AI will change our workplaces. It is part community of practice, part thought leadership platform, and part innovation hub. Through her leadership, the council promotes the building of connection of well-being and well-doing. The council's goal is to shape the future of how we connect, collaborate, and thrive in the workplace. Her passion for well-being is also deeply rooted in her personal experience as a newcomer to Canada at a young age. She witnessed what it was like for immigrants and newcomers to struggle to belong both to the community and in the workplace. These experiences built a strong empathy and a drive to ensure that organizations also see themselves as communities where employees feel that they belong and can thrive. Tiagi, as the executive director of the Employee Wellbeing Council, it's great to have you in the inaugural episode of the Wellbeing Ignites While Doing podcast. Welcome.
Thank you, Adjoa. I'm so happy to be here and excited for this podcast to really ignite some conversations, right?
Excellent. Well, before we get started on your expertise in social health and the role of belonging and driving well-doing, we'd like to start by getting to know you a little bit better as a person. Okay. Our focus at the council is to be human-centric, and you are human, so let's center on you.
All right.
I'm going to ask you a couple of questions from the Proust questionnaire now, and then a couple others at the end of the podcast. So the French essayist novelist Marcel Proust used to use these questions in parlor games because he felt that the answers to these questions would reveal your true nature and identity.
Okay.
So here's the first question for you. Which talent would you most like to have?
This was a real toss-up. There's a couple talents I would really love to have. I'm going to say languages only because in communication, if there's an opportunity for me to address them in their native language, I think that just warms people so much.
Very good. Unless you're in Paris, then don't try your French. If you were to die or were to come back as a person or a thing, what would it be?
Wow. Okay. So this, I'm going to have to like go back again to childhood. I remember seeing Mother Teresa on TV from time to time, and I saw her kindness that she extended, especially to leprosy patients, and really stayed with me. My mom is a Buddhist. She talks a lot about showing empathy for others, but it's one thing to say it and then see it in the everyday, but then watching her, she just seems so much more compassionate. She took things to the next level, and it really stayed with me into adulthood.
That's not a lofty goal at all, right? I was anticipating you'd say grasshopper or something. Well done. Okay, so let's dig into our topic of today, and it's really about social health. We want to talk about what it is and how it works in the workplace. Why are you passionate about social health?
I think that social health is really the art and the science of connecting with other folks. I've really learned a lot over the last few years about why this topic is so vital to our well-being in the workplace and beyond.
I read a report by the World Health Organization that talks about social determinants of health. And there's many factors involved in that, but certainly social norms and social connection plays a role. And there, to your point, are many reports about the role that social health now plays in our well-being. And I think it's not something that's been discussed a lot. So to continue in that facet, actually, it's not even been discussed a lot in the workplace, I would suggest. I think it's now becoming more of a topic in the workplace. Mm-hmm. Certainly mental health has become more of a topic. And initially it was around physical health, recognizing that when you're physically well, then, right, leads to, to well-doing. So let's talk about social health. Why is that a critical pillar in the workplace as well?
When you think of the highest performers, the issue that always typically comes up is around that bad word, burnout, and how does helping your employees connect better with one another from a social health standpoint within the workplace ultimately have a significant impact on their happiness and performance? So I think that those are critical things that leaders need to start to take into consideration as they develop a high-performing culture within their organization.
Great. And to just piggyback on that a little bit and talk a little bit deeper about the relationship connection, I know one of the consulting houses at one point in time had a survey where they would actually ask, do you have a best friend at work? Being the cynic that I am, I will admit to you, 20 years ago, I'm like, who cares? But now I see, as it's only taken me 20 years to come around the corner, but talk a little bit more about that relationship piece and why that is important in the workplace. Yeah. People have, whether it's a best friend or at least have a strong relationship with colleagues in the workplace.
Gallup study said that if you do have a best friend in the workplace, you're 7 times more likely to be engaged. And I know, even just looking back in my own life, when I think about some of the best years, it's because of the friendships that I've formed. For companies, building out teams and leaders, hitting goals, it's important that you take into account the importance of making sure that folks are connecting with one another. There needs to be practices in place to really help that come to fruition.
Right. So that each leader practices that this is, you talk about a yoga practice, but also leadership is a practice, right? And there's certain elements that need to be practiced. And so I don't think we could do this podcast without talking about the pandemic, or every probably podcast without talking about the pandemic as well. It's something that we will reflect on for many years, I'm sure. And so what did the pandemic really teach us about social health?
Yeah, I think one of the big things that I had witnessed myself is that visceral feeling of loneliness that was felt for so many folks, being isolated from having that physical in-person contact. It was like something was truly stolen from us during that time. And researchers like Dr. Julianne Holt-Lonsted, she specifically speaks about how not having that social connection is the same as thirst and hunger. It's the same physical, biological feelings that our bodies go through when we're thirsty and we're hungry. And ultimately, it elevates levels of cortisol and inflammation if that could cause additional diseases that will form within our bodies. The pandemic really brought things to light, and it really made everyone realize, wow, okay, wait, actually connecting with other folks is very critical to our mental health and our physical health, because the social health flows into those two elements too.
At the Wellbeing Council, we believe that inclusion really needs to be embedded in everything that we do, in all of our practices. So what do organizations and leaders need to do to ensure that when we're thinking about social health and focus on social health, that it is inclusive?
Leaders ultimately need to create space, number one, for folks to be able to get to know one another. I think it's important for people to feel like they are seen and heard within the workplace. But from a leadership standpoint, have these systems in place. So maybe have certain rituals or certain types of mechanisms where employees are able to have a coffee break, have a moment to connect with other peers, or even have designated areas within an organization where it's encouraged. These are like activation, connection pods, areas. That all stems from the top line leadership really understanding that this is critical to the overall organizational health, that once employees feel connected and trust is then forged, you're going to have a stronger organization that's ultimately going to perform.
And I would add or suggest also with authenticity. I feel sometimes leaders, in particular, maybe of the previous generation, went through training programs which said, must walk floor and ensure to greet employees by first name. And it check, I think this has to, in this day and age, inauthenticity is smelled from 20 feet away. Yep. So that it's also done, that connection a point is done really in an authentic way. If you don't actually really care about people, then maybe you need to also find a role that is an individual contributor role. In our pre-get-together, get ready for this, is what I really liked was when you talked about data points. And so I'm just going to give that as a prompt.
In our conversations, companies are able to leverage technology, looking at different data points to make decisions more effectively. In the same vein, if we take into account that social health within an organization could also be viewed through a similar lens, how can we help them feel more seen and heard? It will benefit the organization in the long run.
Nice. And also we had talked about the other day that as we're looking to connect with leaders, or leaders are looking to connect with their team members, is oftentimes we notice, and when we talk about inclusion, we say it is respectful and it is accurate and it's appropriate to notice differences. But it's also important to find similarities, right? And expand a little bit on that notion of how do I make that connection as a leader where I may notice differences, but what else, and as it relates to, you're using the term data at the time as well, data point. What else can we do? How else do I build that relationship with you where I may not think that we, on the surface, have anything in common?
This is a lost art that needs to be resurfaced. But within our society, and I mentioned technology earlier, the last 10, 15 years, certainly think about how pervasive some technology can be in terms of actually pulling us apart rather than bringing us together. When you have a moment to sit down with someone, really be present in that moment. What makes that person tick? Why are they in the company? What are their goals in the future? What does life look like outside? And then exercise active listening in person within that sphere of that zone of connection. You're able to then take certain data points and repeat it back to that individual. Boy, oh boy, that's when you really start to ignite trust and build those bonds.
And that's when that person knows that you've actually listened. If you remember what they said, and then a couple of days or a month later can say, hey, I remember we both like the Blue Jays, or we're both single parents, or we're both love to travel, and those kinds of interconnections where it may not at the beginning seem obvious that we have that connection, but we do. And I did that in a session once where I just put up random pictures that represented an airplane or a scene from a mountain or a dog. And I just asked people to pick not even explain why, but just pick one picture that spoke to them. Now, most people then explained why. But it was interesting that even in that room, that created an immediate sort of bond and an immediate connection, as people say, oh, you like to travel. You pick the plane. You probably like to travel like I do. Or you pick the hiking scene, right? Because I love to be out in nature as well. That. And so it was a great, because some icebreakers are just like really blah. Or we've all done them 1,000 times, and yet I needed an icebreaker. So I used that. It was personal, right? It got to that, again, to the nature of that person who was sitting in the room with a bunch of other strangers quite quickly, and created some of those points that then at the next break, they could chat with each other. And so I think that is what you're also recommending that leaders do, is really take that few moments and get to know that person as an individual.
Absolutely. I think it goes such a long way in building trust. Building trust is super critical, but it trickles into our social health, because when you're able to have a very meaningful conversation with someone, even if it's for 5 minutes and you get to know somebody at a deeper level, you'll have a foundation for future conversations and maybe building friendship, which friendship also takes a lot of time. It doesn't just happen overnight, right? Absolutely. You build on it. You use it as like a building blocks.
And if you're not good at remembering, put it in a spreadsheet. So put this detail about the person in a spreadsheet. For those analytics out there. It's a practice. As I think one of the things that we've emphasized, some people are naturally good at it. And for some people, it becomes an adapted behavior. But in order to be a successful leader, whether it comes to you right naturally or you have to adapt to that behavior, it's something that needs to be practiced. You're the leader that people want to work for. You're the leader that people don't want to leave, kind of thing.
Yeah. If we know that things like physical health, we know that going to the gym is extremely important. We all also need to take into account that social fitness, once we shine a light on this and we start to really understand it more and more, then if we can act on it, that would be terrific.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a great analogy between physical health and social, or physical fitness and social fitness. Yeah, you get out there and practice. 10 laps. 10 laps of social fitness. Let's go. I want to come back a little bit to the hybrid environment. And this sort of leads into also, we're going to end with what's the one thing I as a leader am going to do today? That'll be our final question. But let's talk a little bit more about in a hybrid working environment, how do we practice? How do we get socially fit when our team might be dispersed, might come into the office, might not, or maybe some come in, some never come in? How do we do this in a hybrid environment?
It goes back to leadership from the top. If leaders believe that this is important for the overall well-being of their employees, I think it needs to be encouraged that they maybe take at least 15 minutes once a week to connect with someone. Maybe it is someone in the office. Maybe it is someone close by who's an employee. Maybe it's just someone within the neighborhood that you connect with. So on the Monday huddles where you're running through all of the deliverables for the week, take a moment as a leader also to encourage, what did you learn about someone last week that you'd love to share with us? If that type of behavior ritual or tradition is encouraged within a team, then you're going to start to see now everyone's going to come Monday morning way more chipper because, hey, I learned this cool thing about this individual. And then they share and it lights up everyone's day as opposed to just running through the metric and getting them started that way.
I like that point. And you and I had discussed also something that I did during the pandemic when I had a team of about 30 in some, and we were still all virtual. So I had only met really my direct reports. And what I asked a colleague to do was to help me set up subgroups, and I called them coffee chat. And so once a week, we rotated through all 30 and different departments and different colleagues who didn't work with each other necessarily also were put together. So it wasn't just per department. And the rule was you couldn't talk about work, or they could ask me anything, or they could talk about anything, but it couldn't be about work. And I have to say, I will fully admit that when we first started it, it was a bit awkward. It was awkward. Yeah. They didn't know me. I didn't know them. I was new to the organization. And so I did lead the conversation a fair bit, but as the second time that group came around, it was far more fluid. And it was initially a bit of a chore for me as a leader because I was having to put so much energy into it and it felt a bit like pulling teeth. But as we did it more frequently, there was that greater connection and that greater bond. And it was, I think, in some ways also important given the fact that we were all working virtually and hadn't seen each other, right? Some employees I didn't see for over a year during that time.
You made an intentional effort to bring people together and to get to know one another. So when I think of leadership and I think of leaders, I think of stewards. They're stewards oftentimes, and they're helping guide and shepherd, and they're modeling behavior for everyone else. So kudos to you. I think that's fantastic. And hopefully that this encourages more of these types of like intentional shifts that need to happen within our workforce and beyond.
Great. So Tiagi, we've talked about intentionality, as you just spoke about, authenticity. We've talked about active listening. So I'm listening to this podcast and I think, oh, wow, this is all super great and interesting. but so what? Or now what? I guess it's more like now what? So what is the one thing, right, that you're going to tell me one thing or two things, if you choose, that I need to do today? Like, don't start the car and do it today.
So my advice to leaders is reconsider how your Mondays start. Actually, put it out there that you're going to encourage your team members to connect with someone, either within the organization or beyond. And then come prepared on Monday mornings to do a quick stand-up around what you've learned about other folks. Setting the tone and having a change in culture for the Monday mornings, that would be very interesting.
So we've reached the time in our podcast where we're going to learn a lot more about you that we can then share to others. So I'm going to ask you two more questions from the Pruse questionnaire, Tiagi. So if you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be?
I am quick to make decisions. And I know my co-founder Paul Grace will attest to that. And being impatient at times. I think that those are things that I would love to change about myself.
Fair enough. It's a practice. Well, if one impatient person to another impatient person.
Exactly.
I hear you. I feel you. And then lastly, last but not least, who are your heroes in real life?
I'm in awe of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think that she is a phenomenal leader. May she rest in peace. When I think about her life and her legacy, she coupled intelligence and unwavering commitment to justice and equality. She systematically changed the way laws were formed to allow more women to advance in society. I really respect and admire her. And then the second person would be Ralph Waldo Emerson because of his essays around self-reliance. He spoke to break away a little bit from societal thinking and be more independent thinkers. And I think that's critical for all of us to take to heart.
You've certainly shown us the independent thinking today, Tyagi. It's been great. It's been such a pleasure as well, but also pleasure to spend time with you today. And we wish the Employee Wellbeing Council great success.
Thank you so much, Ajwa. We're so happy to have you as our host.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Well Doing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.